The Dadas were quite an inspiration for you. Can you tell us how when you discovered them and what it is about them that resonates with you?
Yeah, the Dadas, you know, both poets and painters, you know, and as far as memory recollects, some dancers that were also connected with it. But the Dada poets. Certainly, that was one of the groupings that we wanted to get into poems for the millennium. Certainly, when I was first coming into poetry, the Dadas in the general appraisal of art in the 20th century, we're not on television, so you can't see the gesture I'm making with my finger, you know, but there were, you know, a very, very small part of that story. And yet, when the artist, the American artist Robert Motherwell, in the later 1950s, published a collection, an anthology called The Dada Painters and Poets, my eyes opened wide, you know, as did the eyes of many others. And although he included very little poetry in it, the talk about the poetry and the talk about the poets, you know, led me to look further into that work, and I approached it with a sense of a great kinship between us, we who were younger poets in 1960, and this generation of my father. I wanted at that point, in fact, to do a small anthology of Dada poets, you know, with the, not anything else, but, you know, but the poems presented there. I said I was, I announced it for the little press that I had, and said that I was preparing collection of Dada poetry to be called That Dada Strain. And I never carried through on that, but many years later, I published a book of my own poems called That Dada Strain, in which the poems are addressed one by one to the poets of Dada. In Poems for the Millennium, there is the Dada section, a section that does not exist in other anthologies of the 20th century, along with a section on Futurism and Surrealism and the Objectivists and the Negritude poets. The Dada anthology, in effect, appears within Poems for the Millennium 35 years later.
And is it that irreverence, that sense of play? What is it that resonates with you?
It's the irreverence. It's the sense in a movement that grows up during the First World War of the shock to language and to consciousness. From the centuries' violence, not the Dada's violence, although there's a kind of violence in their poetry, in their language, in their art, but the sense of revulsion and the desire that they express by strong action on their own part to cleanse language of the corruption that it's undergone in the name of nation state and
advertising
advertising.
Which might now be more relevant to the situation than a nation state. Mm-hmm. You talk about how your eyes opened up. I can sense that people's eyes open up when they hear you reciting Dada poetry, and their hearts as well. Would you grace us with something, something from the Dada strain or whatever you choose?
Yeah, here's, this is, speaking of Dada, do you want a long one or a short one?
Well, maybe a short one.
This is the opening poem of That Dada Strain called That Dada Strain. the zigzag mothers of the gods of science, the lunatic fixed stars and pharmacies, fathers who left the tents of anarchism unguarded, the arctic bones strung out on Saint Germain like tom-toms, living light bulbs, aphrodisia. Art is junk, the urinal says. Dig a hole and swim in it. A message from the grim computer. Ye are hamburgers.
Maybe I should have picked a long one. And it's just maybe some Ugo Ball. You know, when you did that the other night, that just lit people up. And you know, you don't have the toy whistling device, which I saw you do in Taos at the Poetry Circus.
Well, I don't have the Ugo Ball. If it's the sound poem, I don't have the text in front of me.
Oh, okay.
But I'll do a poem addressed to Ugo Ball. Ugo Ball was a German poet. These are all young poets who have come escaping the war to Zurich in Switzerland, and there set up a movement with a silly name, Dada, as against the highfalutin other names that avant-garde movements have taken, like Acmeism and Expressionism, Rayonism. Here Dada is the name of the movement, and they begin to do performances in a place that they call, after the great rationalist French philosopher Voltaire, the Cabaret Voltaire. And in one of the early performances, Ugo Ball gets up a costume, does sound poetry, loses consciousness, thinks he's having a great religious conversion experience, goes off into the mountains of Switzerland and dies there as a kind of Catholic Dada saint. June 23rd, 1916, for that evening's reading, he had made himself a special costume. His legs were in a shiny blue cylinder, which came up to his hips so that he looked like an obelisk. Over it, he wore a huge coat collar cut out of cardboard, scarlet on the inside, gold on the outside. It was fastened at the neck in such a way that he could give the impression of wing-like movement by raising and lowering his elbows. He also wore a high blue and white striped witch doctor's hat. A glass tube ecstasy for Ugo Ball. A glass tube for my legs, says Ugo Ball. My hat a cylinder in blue and white. The night, the German ostriches, the sink he pisses in. All these become his world. His Dada song begun there holds the image until it comes at us. The image from its cross looks down, a ribbon, a revolver, mud. These contribute to his death, also to what his death contributes later. Too hysterical, too sick with God and time. A carousel, a roasted poet, fish, the queen says to his mind, and enters where the street of mirrors starts. She sees his face reflected in hunger of the world as pain, the consciousness of death. Not why we die, but why we dream about it, and why our dreams can't save the dying remnant. Ugo, as I write this poem, the voice cries from a further room. The dancer, singer calls me from a further room. I step into an obelisk below the waist. My mouth opens to sing, but freezes shut in grief for you. Umbula. Take, pitli, solencola, the collapse of language, tabla, tokta, tokta, takabala, takatak, a glass tube ecstasy, escapes from time, babula, umbalam, the image and the word over your bed hang, crucified, again the cabaret explodes, again, fatigue, 1 foot in glass, a glass nerve, and a priestly gas pump pulls her hair out.
Well, we're just about out of time, and there's many things I'd like to talk to you about, but I guess I'd like to end on this note. You say in prefaces and other writings, your book of poetics from many years ago, I'm guessing this was 1970s or something like that, you say in it, no poet solves the problem of vision under these changed circumstances. And by our own time, it becomes evident that the function of poetry isn't to impose a single vision or consciousness, but to liberate similar processes in others. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think that's expressing a hope for poetry and Maybe it's clearer in the post World War II generation than it was for those earlier in the century. There have been kind of tyrannical forms of poetry and art. The surrealists, led by a very brilliant French poet André Breton, tried to establish themselves on a kind of Soviet model, with a board of directors, like a kind of surrealist Politburo, but more with the authoritative voice of Breton himself. Part of the attraction of Dada, was in Tristan Tzara's declaration, although he could be pretty autocratic, from time to time, that the true Dadas are against Dada, so that you undermine yourself when you're moving in the direction of total authority, for many of those that I was with. It was possible to see ourselves as initiators of something in which others were in invited to join and to supersede us rather than our laying down an authoritative rule. I can only say that for myself it's been a hope that the work could stimulate work in others, whether it's the poetry or the performances or the anthologies there's a discomfort with finality and closing the door against anyone else entering.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at there because we're out of time. So many other questions to ask you. It's been such a delight and an honor to have you in our place, and I wish you continued success, and thank you so much for the inspiration.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
We've been talking with Jerome Rothenberg. He's the author of over 50 books of poetry. He's a translator, performance poet pioneer, and incredible anthologist. And he's been our visiting poet at SPLAB in Auburn, Washington for Fall 2001.